welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Devil Hamza.
And we're here, and today's episode is on male sexual abuse and the survivors therein. And we have two guests on the phone, and we have one here in the studio. Welcome, John.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
And Kathy and Simon, are you there?
We're here.
Awesome. Wonderful. Okay, John is a sexual abuse survivor and an advocate for men. Did you want to introduce yourself, John?
Well, I'd like to add to that. I'm not only advocate for male survivors. I advocate, I personally, just to set the tone here, I hope someday we can degender sex abuse, because we're talking, in my case, historical sex abuse with a very young person, and I struggle sometimes in defining who gets impacted more, men or women. So I'm hoping someday I can coin the term humanistic abuse. So I don't know if that's kind of way out there, but I advocate for anyone that's been subject to sexual violence and sexual abuse.
Nice. Wonderful. And Simon and Kathy, did you guys want to introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, hi. Kathy and Simon are from Big Voice Pictures, and we produced a documentary, two documentaries on child sexual abuse. One is called The Healing Years, about women survivors of child sexual abuse. And the most recent one we just finished in March, it's called Boys and Men Healing, and it's about men survivors of child sexual abuse healing and speaking out. It's a hopeful, more hopeful look at the issue that you can actually heal and thrive.
Thank you both for... And Simon, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Just wanted to say hi. And the Men's Project in Ottawa has done a screening of the film already back in, I think, June.
Wonderful. And we have a short clip later in the show from that, thanks to YouTube. Can we play, just to get us started and give people an idea of what we're talking about, can we play the short clip? Okay. No, we don't have that loaded up. So we're talking about male abuse survivors. And John, maybe you can talk a little bit about your story.
Oh, well, I was abused as a young boy, as were many other children. Started when I was approximately 10 years old and lasted for a period of 5 years. Abused by a Roman Catholic priest. He was arrested and charged and convicted ultimately for these crimes. At that point in time, I think it was typical to get probation and kind of hush up all of the events. You know, this, I'm speaking about the church and the police and courts and so on and so forth. That lasted, you know, that kind of went into remission for a period of 20 years, where I got drunk, stoned, and lived a very bohemian lifestyle and incurred all kinds of damages, which I'm still trying to unravel to this day. So that's kind of through the process of recovery, I sort of coming back to a recurring theme that, in fact, the weird stuff I had been exposed to was, in fact, sexual abuse, and that I had been abused, and that kind of was the watershed moment after 20 years of inflicting all kinds of damage. It's a little hard to articulate this, because sometimes it's a bit surreal. I'm looking at someone else's life and going, wow, that's crazy stuff.
Yeah. How old were you, John, when you realized that you were sexually abused?
Probably about 35. And it's ironic. I was assisting a friend going through a treatment center, Homewood, and they were going through a treatment for anorexia and bulimia. And I remember it being a dutiful friend. I was reading the subject matter, and it was outlining the criteria and some of the clinical components of anorexia, bulimia, and that sexual abuse was played a strong role. And as I was reading the questionnaire, I went, holy man, you were abused. So it's kind of, you know, it's really quite strange to live that intimately and did not have a clue that I, in fact, had been violated. It was just that weird thing that happened. I mean, it doesn't get any weirder than being an altar boy and then having an intimate encounter with your priest. That's about as weird as you can get, I would think. Yeah. Maybe it gets weirder, and you know, it hasn't in my life. But
that it would, and And I think don't think that's all that uncommon for kids to not understand what's going on. I know myself. I was sexually assaulted at the age of 10, and it was years before I formulated the concept of what had happened in that event. So I don't think that's all that uncommon to, I mean, for me, it was one of my best friends that was a few years older, and for me, it was just something that was icky, and then he didn't want to play with me anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took years before I had any comprehension of that something wrong had happened.
Well, and I think, you know, I think you're touching close to the societal response to abuse has been that we really haven't looked at it, and we've been, even to this day, when the issue of abuse comes up, people are very quick to change the subject and look in a different direction. And I want, before I forget, I really want to hammer this out here, that sexual abuse is a societal problem. I stopped being a victim a long time ago. Every time a person is abused in our society, the entire society is impacted and is as well victimized. And we can't... I've had people say to me, oh, John, we're so sorry that you were abused. It's like, well, you know, this is your world, too. And when we stand idly by and allow for these things to happen without a definitive, clear response, then we're all kind of stuck in this vortex of guilt and shame, and what are we going to do? And anyone who thinks today that the issues of sexual abuse is diminished in any degree, I personally think it's shifted domains. Go on the internet and check out the child exploitation and the abuse issues out there. It's alive and well all over the place. So we're failing as a society to embrace the problem and look at how do we make the world safe for our children. It's probably way out of context and out there, but I think it's a very live issue for me. That
I don't think it's
It's completely live, and I think part of our message in our film is just that, not only the issue of alcohol and drug abuse, as you talked about personally, John, so many, and I don't have the statistics, but so many people that were sexually abused that don't deal with their pain go on to abuse drugs and alcohol, and for many, as in our, not all, but for many and some in our film, will go on to commit crime and end up in prison. Mm-hmm. So, and this, like you say, John, impacts all of us in many ways. The cost to society, the ongoing, the perpetration of abuse that continues, dysfunctional families, people that cannot live full lives. I mean, it is, the scope of it is monumental.
You're absolutely right. And just to, I actually had a discussion with a leading authority on drug addictions based in London, and the numbers he quoted for incidents of abuse. Now, I know intimately because I do some 12-step stuff once in a while, and the people I've met in there, I've met very few that haven't had some type of abuse in their background that have gone on to become, you know, that I've met in recovery. But when I spoke with Dr. Judson, he was, the number was like 85%. It was huge. So it's, but what I want to add too.
And it's the same with prison, right? The statistics in prison.
Absolutely. And if you ask, and I know some parole officers, when they're dealing with people that are recidivist criminals, and if you start taking off the layers of what happened and you start digging back to the early youth stuff, it's very common to have incidents of sexual abuse. What I want to add, and something that I miss articulating well frequently, is, and I'm going to refer to it as the spiritual disintegration of society. I was in Cornwall working with some survivors, and as a result of my involvement there, I was I ended up meeting a couple of elderly Frenchmen that were just in total disbelief that their children had been abused. And that's where I kind of connected on the societal loss, because when they finally clicked that their children had been abused, he started crying. He said, John, how can this happen? Our church. So then we in this world have been, and this is just my opinion, and I also want to point out, I don't collectively speak for a group of victims, but independently my observation is this, that our society has been shaped and guided by Christianity for so darn long, and as I refer to what happens, when our world, when we have incidents of abuse to the degree that we're seeing it today, it almost undermines and really creates a structural defect in our belief system. We believe in certain things in our society, by and large. There's others that don't follow that. And I'm not sure I'm articulating this very well, but the spiritual foundation of our society is fatally cracked at this point as a result of our institutions and organizations condoning and harboring pedophilia and deviant sexuality. So, yeah, I'm going to shut down for a minute because I'm going in a bit of a speed wobble. Sorry.
So we're going to play a little clip here now, just a little one to give you just one person's little spiel.
A lot of people think rape only happens in a dark alleyway, that beautiful women are the usual victims. But sexual violence isn't really about sex. It's about power.
And it can happen to anyone, anywhere. I should know. I was raped when I was 9.
I just experienced many symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. And I thought it was just uniquely me.
Boys are sexually abused in vast numbers and vastly more frequently than as a society we're recognizing.
I was absolutely amazed that, in fact, it was so common among sexual abuse survivors of feeling alone or feeling it was only you.
I know that childhood rape separated me from my spirit. I thought I was broken most of my life. I struggled, fought, cried, prayed, and meditated my way back to me. While he was raping me, I felt like I left my body because I thought I was going to die. So I wasn't present there. And actually, I had agreed to die at that point. Because of my upbringing and just the pride that was instilled with me, I was able to continue to do so many successful things. I graduated from UC Berkeley. I'm a teacher. I've taught for 14 years. I've motivated many young people to be their greatest selves. And even throughout my pain, I was still able to help other people work through their own shame and guilt and even denial about childhood sexual abuse.
It's not something that should be a secret.
I was 13 when the abuse first started. And he abused me several times a week for several years all over this country and even on a trip to Europe. He began to take the same interest and do the same things with my younger brother, and that concerned me. And it definitely galvanized my absolute determination to send a message, to speak a truth, to help another survivor, without a doubt.
It certainly sent a very strong message to the institutions who were harboring and sex offenders that they can no longer get away with it. And Mars Advocacy and others, I think, will have a real impact in terms of protecting children in those institutions.
Things normal men experience, whether it be intimacy with their own spouse or partner, whatever it is, it's very different for that survivor. A simple touch could trigger memories or flashbacks, and it makes it very difficult to have a normal, safe relationship.
I think it's important for people who want to have an intimate relationship with someone who's had particularly a childhood trauma, psychological trauma, to understand that what's involved is to enter into that journey with the person. It's not simply to stand near them and be sympathetic and listen well. It's really a journey that you will undertake together.
There was nothing more liberating. I can't recall a bigger step in my own healing than when I broke my silence and told my story. And when you learn to hope and trust and understand it's okay to be able to express yourself, even if it's something simple like playing with your kids. Men need to have hope. And when you have hope, you will heal, without a doubt.
And that was a little bit of you guys' documentary there, and just a little teaser from the work that you have done. Kathy, are you there?
Yeah, sorry, the phone was just going in and out for a second.
Okay. Yes.
This is Simon, and I just have to say one thing that's interesting. After we've done these both these films, we get a lot of calls in from survivors, and I sit with them and I talk to them. There are places I can refer them to in America, but it's interesting. I always say, well, put a prayer and something like that. Go to your spiritual place. And the clergy survivors tell me, I can't go there. I can't go to my spiritual place because what the church did to me. So that's the, I always found that powerful thing. What do you do with that, you know? How do a clergy abuse survivor go back to that spiritual place that they need to get back to?
Can you answer that, John?
Oh, well, I don't know. It's an arduous task and a difficult journey. I fluctuate between having some perception of spirituality and being a bit despondent from a lack of faith. So I don't know. I think that is a very difficult question to respond to, because of cynicism. I mean, you had the biggest layer or the biggest problem with this is that you're abused by a person that was a conveyor of God's will, and then the response. I've had the luxury of sitting in a courtroom and watching two opposing bishops tell conflicting stories and have the realization that one of them was truthful and one wasn't. So it really does erode. Now we're talking religion. There is an alternative, and that's to find and discover spirituality. But how does one do that when your mind is shaped by years of programming and, you know, in my case, a Catholic Church boy, we have a patent on guilt is something that we, you know, have a bit of a patent on. So it's kind of, I don't know. Frankly, I'm going to throw this right out there. We talk about recovery. We talk about healing. And I'm not sure. I think we can learn to cope. We can learn to address and look at our abuses. I think the best we're going to do is to create a safer world for our children and for their children and some awareness to society. But I'm not sure that there really is this perception that you can get whole again. You can't unring the bell. And I'm speaking purely for myself. Just when I figure out where I think I'm starting to make serious progress, the magnitude of what's happened to me starts to hit. And that isn't a poor me. It's a frank reality of what I look at. It's like, holy man, this is pretty weird stuff. This is pretty... It has altered virtually everything in my world to the point that it's almost beyond my perception of appreciating and understanding how impacted we are. I kind of have digressed from your answer, so I don't know. I mean, what is spirituality? It's a very confusing gray area. I mean, how do we even? And then I think I get it. Well, I thought that I was I loved Father Glendening as I was performing oral sex on him for a period of 5 years. You know, I mean, that might be a bit graphic, but that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about the emotional, spiritual destruction of human beings, their families, the society. How do we really have faith in spirituality after that? I do have it sometimes. I'm kind of beleaguering the point, but it's a big challenge.
Yeah, and I think it's up to our spiritual leaders, and I think that they need to develop that trust again. And when they're dealing with someone like John or so many other people that have had extremely bad experiences within the church. I mean, I think it's up to the church to heal that.
But I think that's a hard thing for them to do right now, because almost every day there's something in the news about a priest abusing somebody.
Yeah, and I think we have to divide the Catholic Church and some of the other faiths, because I mean, I think that there are some challenges within Catholicism that don't exist within a lot of the other religious sects. And I mean, I'm not an expert on that, and others that have dealt with this maybe can talk more about it. But I think that there's some definite challenges within Catholicism that are really, really making that healing process difficult.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Well, I think the denial, and one of the men in our film was abused by a priest, and I just want to really make the point, too, that there's fathers that abuse, there's coaches that abuse, there's neighbors and brothers, and so it's not just priests, but in our film, one of the men was abused by a priest, and he fought the church for 7 years to change a law that protected the churches from being sued, so he couldn't sue the church. And he actually won, and the chain actually changed the law, but the church went after him like you would not believe, with lawyers and money and, you know, trying to keep him silent and still in denial and promising him things, and, you know, never, nothing came through. So this constant assuaging the issue, denying, fighting survivors that are, you know, barely able to get out of bed, you know, to fight along. He was having severe post-traumatic stress during his advocacy, even, and you know they went after him. So it's a fundamental lying that's going on, denying that's going on, and you know that has to change. And it's like that with not only the church and priests, and it's also with you know, for any family that's in denial when a child comes forward or wants to talk about it, and they are ignored or told they're making it up or whatever it is. So the denial has to change.
Okay, you know, and I'm trying to collect my thoughts and weigh in on this. I was sued by the church. I've been through that. So it is quite bizarre to watch. What I find more troubling, and I think, and I agree, it covers all organizations and infrastructures. The church is out in the primary focus at this point. But I think that what troubles me is the lack of leaders of these institutions, a lack of willingness to embrace the solution. I don't think it's really that difficult to address sexual abuse in our world. I think it shows real leadership. I recently met with a bishop, and I said to him, "Father, I'm trying to be respectful, old habits die hard." I said, "Why does the church consistently wait to be a defendant in a lawsuit before they address the issues of sexual abuse? Is it not within your mandate or criteria to globally reach out and create resources for all survivors of sexual abuse?" And we had a very good philosophical discussion on the value in doing that. But kind of coming back to when that spirituality question, when that's a response of the church, and the unwillingness to do some very basic, simple things, how about do what you say to do? Say, "I'm sorry. This shouldn't have happened." You know, the paper, written statements from institutions expressing their sorrow really doesn't do the same as a heartfelt response to the issues. And that's by doing things and being part of the dialogue and not this arrogant, "We have it all under control," and then the next week 5,000 other cases pop up in New Zealand or something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, I think it's across the board. I mean, in the United States, there's very few, if any, programs for men that come out and want to get help. You know, some of the men in our film wanted to start healing, and they could not find a counseling center or a group that dealt specifically with, you know, men being sexually abused. So, you know, there's all across the board, there needs to be, like you say, actually action, implementing programs for men. The Men's Project in Ottawa has a training program and a comprehensive program for men, for therapists to be trained, and a program for men to get help there. And 1 in 6 in America is specifically for. Actually, they're going. They're international now. Internationally, having resources for men and counselors to help men that were sexually abused as boys. Mm-hmm. So we need more of that. We need implementation of services where people can actually see change happening and feel that they can come out and talk about it. They can come out and get help, and they won't be hushed, or it won't be followed through that, you know, they'll get what they need.
Exactly. And we're going to have to take a short break for right now. I do want to say the crisis and support line in Ontario is available 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Men's Project at 1-877-677-6532. We'll be right back after these short commercial breaks.
I know someone that thinks it's okay to take advantage of girls that are drunk.
My friend is in an abusive relationship.
I know someone that thinks it's funny to make homophobic jokes.
I wish I could just talk to someone. Talk to someone.
Almost everyone knows someone who has experienced sexual violence. One in four female college or university students will be sexually assaulted during her studies. And one in seven men has been sexually assaulted before he is 18. The first of its kind, the I Know Someone campaign, is an innovative pilot project at UWO, developed to increase awareness and understanding of sexual violence on campus. The campaign aims to involve both men and women as empowered and critical allies in ending sexual violence. The I Know Someone campaign is an awareness, training, and prevention program developed by the Sexual Assault Center London, Changing Ways, and the University Students Council at UWO. The campaign is funded by the Ontario Trillium Foundation. If you would like to get involved with the campaign, email usd.iknowsomeone@uwo.ca or check out the campaign website at iknowsomeoneuwo.ca. Together, we can end sexual violence in our Western community.
Back at Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Devil Hampa.
And I'm John Swales.
And we have Kathy.
And Kathy and Simon.
Kathy and Pictures. Simon from Big Voice Pictures on the line. Thank you guys for coming on at this wee hour in the morning for you.
So we're have to get up sometime, right?
Everybody's got to do it eventually. Yep. Some days it's really hard for me. I don't know about you guys. So we're talking about male sexual abuse survivors. And just before we went to the break, we were talking about resources that were available and the lack therein. And I know, Simon, I was talking to you on the phone, and you made a comparison to the documentary you did on female survivors versus male and the difference in that is. Can you comment on that?
You asking Simon?
Yeah, is he there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, can I just have that question once more?
You were talking about what happened when people called in that were female off of your other documentary versus...
Oh, yeah, that was a beautiful documentary, and it was a powerful way for me to connect to people that have seen the film and that were survivors. In America, there is quite a bit of help for women. And I just referred them to their local rape crisis center, et cetera, and there was a place for them to go to, and a counseling and clinical therapy, and that was easy. But when Boys and Men came out, I referred them to organizations like RAIN, and then RAIN would refer them to a local crisis center, and there was no men's group, and there was no clinical therapy. There was nothing like that. But one thing I found that was interesting is that I said, well, before I said, you know, refer them to somebody else, I said, well, do you need anything more? And they said, no, I just want to be heard. And I'm like, wow. And this is many years ago when I did the healing, when we both did the healing years, Kathy and I, and heard that they just wanted to have a voice. And so I literally sat on the phone and just for about a half an hour and just listened. And there was this, you could hear just this comfort and this feeling of safety and happiness on the other line of just being heard. And I never knew that, You know, I never knew that in doing the film with Kathy, that that was so important for people to have, men and women.
Wonderful. And how long has the Boys and Men Healing been out?
The healing years, we finished in the year 2000, and Boys and Healing was done in March of this year.
Wonderful. And how has the response been?
This response has been absolutely incredible. The Rape Crisis Center is pretty much funded by VAWA, Violence Against Women in the Justice Department. It was started by the feminist movement pretty much back in the 70s and 80s. And I thought, you know, when we did Boys and Men Healing, it really needed to be done. Everybody wanted it to be done. But I thought there would be a little kind of tug and pull in the feminist movement and the rape crisis movement because it was started by women. And it's unbelievable how many coalitions against, state coalitions against domestic violence and rape came to me saying, we want your film in our state conference. And one by one, from Alaska to Indiana to Chicago to Louisiana, to Washington State, they're all calling us to have our film in their state coalition national meeting.
You're very fortunate.
And the U.S. Justice Department was interesting. They called us, VAWA, Judge Kurban from VAWA. She's the director of VAWA. And she said, I want a clip of your film shown in April at the conference, the Sexual Assault Month. And there was these little pieces for about an hour, and all the judges were there and lawyers were there. And Attorney Eric, District Attorney or District Attorney General Eric Holder was invited. And I had Mark Crawford, the clergy abuse survivor, come in and sit between Eric Holder, our Attorney General, and Judge Kurban, the Director of VAWA, and hold hands watching the clip of Boys and Men Healing. And because of that, just 3 weeks ago, Mark Crawford was invited to the White House for 2 days. He was the only male survivor there for 2 days on a roundtable talk on sexual assault in this country that now Obama was in the White House at that time, Biden was in the White House at that time, the Joint Chiefs of Staff was in the White House at that time, and they were saying we need to take this movement to another level, just like the breast cancer awareness movement. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I need to tell you, I'm a little, it's frustrating. I'm glad to see in the United States you're doing a much better job of networking than we are in Canada. Unfortunately, we've had some very divisive components, and we've had to fight to be involved. I think we're making some inroads, but we weren't welcomed as readily, obviously, as you were. So I applaud you, and at the same time, I have a tinge of jealousy. So.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think it's just starting. You know, we don't know where it will go, but it's going to be a lot of effort here. You know, there's a lot of groups that are trying to form, you know, coalitions to work together. But it's going to be time. It's going to take a lot of effort, I believe, to get the services and the funding that's needed and the attention that's needed, you know, for this issue.
And then we deal with...
I have something to say.
Yeah, go ahead, Simon.
I hear what you're saying about Canada, but my finger's on the pulse right now because our film is being spread worldwide. And what I do know is that there was 2 screenings in British Columbia in the last 2-3 weeks. And there are groups fighting there, and the Men's Project, Rich Goodwin, he had a big screening there. And there are things happening in Canada. We know people in the juvenile area, detention area, that really like us a lot, that are pushing the film, that are using the films. So what I know in America is that we all have to become a tribe. We have to come together strong. And if you didn't know about those screenings, you need to know about the screenings. And I think in order to fight this strong, we need to all work together. Whether it's British Columbia or Ontario, we all need to form a coalition that's strong.
after all.
Well, let me just jump in, if I may. First of all, I want to point out that I'm personal friends with Rick Goodwin. I got off the phone with him prior to doing this interview. And Rick and I actually are struggling with dealing with a number of the challenges of trying to coordinate a unified voice for survivors of sexual abuse, specifically males. And again, he's drawn Theo Fleury into the mix there, and they're trying to create awareness as well. But we haven't still. We've got a long way to go. There's a lot of divisiveness. There's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of territorial disputes on whether men should be working with men or women and so on and so forth. I've been involved in a fairly, well, for example, $2 million was recently allotted to provide services for male survivors of sexual abuse. It sought out no input from survivors. And as a result of that flaw, and the divisive platform that the application was running from, I met with the Attorney General and asked him to delay that process for a period of time in order to get it right and do the research necessary. And that's actually where we're at now. And that's Rick and I have been working fairly intently on trying to develop a program that's more focused on male survivors and the unique needs, and to be driven by male survivors. So
exactly.
We
may end up following your wake.
Well,
in America, everybody is still trying to figure it out as well.
Right.
So maybe it's all working together.
Well, and absolutely. And I would really welcome the opportunity to connect with you people. And I've done some work with SNAP historically, and others in the United States. And you're right. I think that this is a global problem where we need to network. Something I want to point out, and it's frustrated me. Sometimes being from Sleepy Hollow, Canada, I wish I lived in Atlanta, Georgia, and the big CNN machine grabbed us up. I came out in 1996. Prior to that, in Mount Cashel and other huge cases of sexual abuse came out in Canada, we have been exposed for many, many years in this country. We've got the leading authorities on sex abuse in London, Ontario, and in spite of that, we are lagging behind other communities on setting the bar on how to deal with this. And I attended, and not the White House, unfortunately, but we had a forum here a week ago in the University of Western, put on by Dr. Jaffe and his group, and we did this forum for 2 days. And what came out of that clear is a need for unity between clinicians and care providers so that we can create a consistent, clear path of treatment and resources. And even more, for me, more significantly, is a need for research, because this is such a new phenomenon that anybody who sits with a straight stone face and tells you they have the magic elixir, I'll delete the adjectives I'd use, but I'd question their truthfulness. We don't know what to do here yet. Every time you ask a question pops up, and this is subjective opinion on my part, but every time I ask a question, it's responded to with a question. How do we deal with this issue? How do we reinstill spirituality? How do we get kids talking? How do we teach them? You can't teach kids. How do you teach parents? There's so much we don't know, and the big machine is just roaring forward with an answer that it doesn't even quite clearly understand the question yet.
And I mean parents. I deal with parents all the time that are trying to bubble wrap their children. And their children are not getting so many experiences in life that they could get, because parents are afraid of sending their children out.
They are. They many just bury their head in the sand. They don't want to hear it. Even, when we talk about our film, you could see their face freeze, or they run away, or what? Doing something like that? Why are you doing a film about that? Why don't you do something light and easy,
They don't want to deal with it.
Well, I'd encourage you both to come up to Canada, and I'll set you up with our local bishop, and we can do a tag team on them. I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, absolutely.
Anytime,
okay,
guys.
Let's get the film, and we'll get our boxing gloves on.
I don't know if you've come across Tom Doyle. He's a leading authority on sex abuse within the church. He's also a priest, and he's an expert witness. But I actually was so despondent after having met with the local bishop. He said, John, he can't change the rules. If he does, he'll be fired. It's really bizarre that it's so entrenched in the machine that you can't it's not about right and wrong. It's about maintaining status quo and a bunch of nonsense that at the end of it, one has to ask himself. You know, let me step back a minute. When I first came forward, I had this little AA typer, and, well, I first broke my anonymity, but anyway, I had some 12-step spiritual guidance. And so I went into this, and I was very, you know, feeling the spiritual glow. And as you come out and you start playing with this machine called Catholicism, and you realize the immense power they have, and that we as a society let them percolate out there with the, and something else that we don't know, and I don't want to just, you know, there's many organizations that are complicit in the crimes of sexual abuse, okay,
so let, and families
and families, absolutely. Having said that, the Catholic Church, the single most glaring difference between Catholicism and other organizations is they're governed by canon law. When I sat through my civil case, we kept talking about civil law, and you're wondering, how in Sam Hill does this apply? What other institution gets to create their own rule book, and we observe
it?
No, I'm serious. They have their own laws that actually have a place in our world where they can go into court and say, we're not answering that because of canon law. And something else for all dutiful Catholics out there, if you've ever raised a concern against the Church, you're excommunicated. Sorry about your luck. You don't fit in anymore.
I grew up Catholic, and I cannot ever go back to Catholic Church. I just can't because of the system and what's happening and what I know, having worked on this issue and talked to men like you and Mark and so many that are suffering still, you know, trying to find the justice that is definitely needed. Yeah. I can't go back. I could not go back into a Catholic church.
Hmm.
Well, it's funny. The Methodist partially funded both of our films. I just had to say that. It was interesting. The Global Methodist Foundation in New York City wanted to fund The Healing Years and Boys and Men Healing.
Oh, good. No, good. And there are, you know, I've actually done a few seminars with different denominations. And I asked, I remember speaking to one, it was a Dutch Reform, and I asked him, I said, do you have issues? He said, no, but we anticipate we might. So we want to be proactive. That's a positive move in my mind, rather than the denial and the we don't have a problem response that you see in other organizations. And, so that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well...
Well, you know, how been working on this since 1996?
I'm sorry? Yeah, no, I came forward.
You came out in 1996?
Yes. Yes.
So have you seen any movement at all with all the work you've been doing?
Well, yes and no. It's like one step forward, two steps back. It's emotionally draining. And even now, as I'm walking into this, and I just talked to Rick Goodwin like minutes ago, and I said, Rick, it takes more than four of us to have a war. This is a huge, huge problem in our society. Until society and people understand that it's a collective community affliction, if sexual abuse were a disease that was airborne or you got it in the water, we would respond in kind. We're, society does not embrace the problem to the degree that I think we need to make... I have an eight-year-old son. I have grandchildren. I have a need to try and create some awareness. And so the short answer is, I haven't seen enough of a response. I hear bureaucratic nonsense. I hear, well, John, that's how the system works. Well, the system's wrong. It's flawed. It's time to change the system. It's time. I actually sat in this forum, and if you can imagine this, there's a 10-year 8 to 10-year implementation time lag from when an issue is put on the table and when it comes into practice. So at that forum, I discovered that the educational system is implementing rules from 2000. Now, that is, so if an issue comes up, how do we protect our kids? I have to wait 10 years for that to get into the system? To raise a simple question,
right.
You know, and since 96... When we
and when I think of people like Martin Luther King, you know, he was on the front lines like all you guys are, and there was change. So I'd like to think that you know, even though it may not appear that there's a lot of change, there's actually a lot of momentum going on. When we did the Healing Year, that was, you know, over 10 years ago, it's still out there, though. The film is still out there. I would never have imagined that we would have been doing a film on boys and men. And that now since we've done it, there are so Oprah Winfrey just did a show the last a couple of weeks ago, two shows on male survivors of child sexual abuse, with 200 male survivors in the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's attention being paid. And these men are now, many of them are starting to go out and say, we've got to make change. You know, we're speaking out. I don't think men 10 years ago would have felt as free to speak out as they're going to start to.
No.
But I think there is actual movement.
No, you're absolutely right.
You know, there's so many men that we meet now that are, when they hear we did this film, they're like, oh, well, that happened to me too. Mm. It, you know, they're able to start talking about it now because there's more more avenues, there's more voices. Male Survivor is a wonderful, you know, site for men to go to for support. Mm-hmm. They started many years ago, and so many more men are visiting their site now to chat online and to, you know, find help from each other and find the resources that are available there and on, like, 1 in 6 websites. So I think there's it's you know, like that yeast effect that, you know, you don't really see it rising, but it is spreading. And I'm hopeful about it. I feel it's a very exciting time now. And it's easier for me to say because I'm not right on the front lines like you are, you know, fighting the law and trying to, you know, make this monumental organizational change and get a coalition of people together. That's a big job, you know, what you're doing. But as a visionary, as somebody who's seen from 10 years ago doing a film on women, I really feel that there is change happening for men. And I feel in the next 10 years, it may take 10 years before there's, you know, a big jump in the change, but it will happen. I really feel that way. I don't think people are going to give up. I get that sense from the men I'm in community. There's people out there like you, many, many, many that are fighting, and they're just fed up. Now it's trying to get it all together and answer those hard questions.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I always recognize that we've moved in leaps and bounds from where we once were. I want to take, you mentioned that you're not on the front line. I would suggest you are on the front line, and that's kind of goes right to the core of what...
Yeah, I guess... That's true.
No, but let me run with that if you don't mind.
You know,
I think all citizens are on the front line, and when we can make that connection, that when our kids and when your brothers and sisters and are abused, you are so impacted. There are no exceptions to the rule. So, and that's really the big fallacy that I see out there, is the lack of recognition. You have to be on the front line. If the listeners and others aren't on the front line, this problem will continue. And I also I concur, yes, 10 years from now. But at the moment, and that's what I need to focus on, we don't have resources. We have these empowered men. That also, there's also a net an impact that happens after the fact. You get empowered, you speak out, and then 5 years later you go, holy mackerel, I'm a mess. There is nothing here to put me back together. And that's the problem. We don't have the resources. We don't have the acute understanding. I really am excited by your enthusiasm, by the way. I really like that, and I think the more people we have. But I want to say, I think you are frontline. Probably more important.
Yeah,
we
are on the front line. Matter of fact, the senator from New Jersey just called a week ago and wanted 24 films, 12 Healing Years, 12 Boys in Healing, to hand out to Senate members to change their minds on a bill that he's going to throw on the floor to pretty much get rid of the statute of limitations in New Jersey. And they said pretty much overnight, it now. We need it now. We're going to give it to every Senate member on the floor. And so there is some interesting things. I think also... with this one senator that's very involved in getting rid of the statute of limitations, I think we have to pick out the people that want to be involved with us. Find governmental people. Don't say, oh, all governmental people are bad or all senators are bad. There's always a few in there that are willing to work with us, and we need to grab those to bring into our tribe.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I just wanted to point out.
And I just want to switch gears for one second. About we were talking about the differences between men and women earlier, and about coming out. I think the other issues that have to change with men are the way we look at masculinity and the stereotypes about masculinity. A lot of men don't come out because you have to be a man. You can't. You can't talk about your feelings. You can't reveal this issue because you might be thought of as gay or a perpetrator. I mean, there's all of these underlying societal threads that have shaped men. And I think that what I'm sensing, having met with so many male survivors who have done the healing, and, maybe they're not completely healed, but they're to a point where they can talk about it, and they can feel their feelings. And for me, these men are very liberated, and they can be a great example for any man in society, whether they were sexually abused or not, to be able to have feelings, be able to speak the truth, be able to be vulnerable, be able to break through these fears of whether they're going to be seen as gay or whatever, and to really, just speak the truth. So there's a change, a liberation that is happening, and that it still needs to be continued for men to, to change those. To help change those stereotypes.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Unfortunately, we could talk all day on this topic, and unfortunately, we only have an hour. So your website is www.bigvoicepictures.com, and you can order the documentary on there. If you want to contact John Swales, his phone number is 1-519-200-3347, and both of that contact information will be on our website at www.betweenthemargins.ca after the show. And everybody remember the hotline, 1-877-677-6532, and here in London, the Sexual Assault Center at St. Joe's Hospital accepts male patients and counseling services. So I'm Michelle Boyce.
I'm Devil Hamza.
Thank you very much to our guests, Simon and Kathy, on the phone from Big Voice Pictures, and you, John, for coming into the studio. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you, everybody
out there, have yourself a healthy day.